listening to Superpower Mamas on the Superpower Up podcast, the show that embraces the art of soulful parenting.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Laura Greco, your host, and you're listening to Superpower Mamas. And today, our topic is a rather serious one, very different from my other shows. And it's talking about healing through childhood sexual abuse. You know, this is a growing awareness. It's been happening for a bit of time now. And this episode is actually exploring like this topic, but from a standpoint of truly healing. We have a guest today. He's for over 20 years, Ed Squire, was a strategic business consultant with the Fortune 500 and global companies throughout the United States, Canada, and Europe. And in 2018, he started a nonprofit, Me Too, What Now?, which raises awareness about sexual childhood abuse and mental health. This organization moves beyond the Me Too and goes to the What Now, which is why I'm very excited to have him as our guest. We have in the households, usually we either know someone or we ourselves are experiencing or someone in the household has or will experience this. So I'm very excited to create this awareness. And thank you so much, Ed, for being here.
Laura, well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it just as much. Thank you.
Yeah, I've explored your website. I've looked through your videos. There's so much abundance of information out there that you have been assisting so many different people with this journey. But this is a journey you have had.
It certainly has been, yes. And like you said with your introduction, it's a hard topic. But once I began to deal with it and understand the impacts that it had in my life, it became less and less. And that's why I ended up starting the nonprofit and a website and focusing on using video to share my story and vlog and to do my best to find a way to just reach out with to and connect with other survivors in a way that that I couldn't find on the internet that might be helpful to them.
Yes, yes. And before I go on, because you just brought something up for me, but before we do that, why don't you let me know we always ask this on the show, what's your superpower?
I love that question. You know, my superpower is something that's been newly found and formed and something that I'm focusing on, which is kindness. And it was kind of born out of learning to be kind to myself first. I didn't really know what that meant when I began this journey to be kind to myself. And once I learned to be kind to myself, I found that my, my awareness of people around me and what they're going through was a bigger focus in my daily life than just what was happening with me. And so I just made it a habit every day to do something to find a way to be kind to somebody, whether it's in a significant way or a seemingly insignificant way. And it has created wonderful interactions. And, you know, there's a ripple effect that happens when you're kind to people. So that's my superpower. And that's what I like to be known for when people meet me. It's what a wonderful way for people to, you know, that's their opinion of it, is that you had something kind to say and that you did something that changed their day or changed their life or did something positive for them.
Wonderful. You know, and what came up for me while you were talking in the beginning about your superpower is that, isn't it true that this nonprofit that you've created has really been a journey of healing for you as well?
There's no question. And, you know, when I started it, I was, in therapy, working through all of the issues that I was dealing with. And it was a great concern to my therapist that I was starting this, and I wanted to do it with the right attitude. And part of it was, yes, reaching out and being a nonprofit and providing value through the information and media that I was putting out there. But at the same time, she was concerned that it might become an unhealthy activity because it would overwhelm me or it might hinder me in my recovery process. And so we've been keeping a close eye on my progress, and it's been wonderful. It's been a fantastic growing experience, and I'm really glad that I started it.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, so am I, because there's so many families that I'm sure and people who are creating not just awareness of what's going on, but awareness within themselves and an opportunity to begin to heal through that. So thank you for your work. Really appreciate that. We have to go for a break. So I'm going to ask you, please, to share where people can find you. And when we come back, we're going to continue in this topic. So where can people find you?
Well, that would be metoowhatnow.com. All one word is where the funnel begins. And all my other platforms you can get to from there. And you can, and it's me too, what now, all one word. And,
okay.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And we've been talking about healing through childhood sexual abuse. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the power of stories. So hold on. You're listening to Superpower Mamas.
Hello, everyone. This is Tonya Don Rekla, Executive Director of Superpower Experts, and we want to thank each of you for making Superpower Up the number one podcast network for personal development and spiritual growth. Because people like you have the courage to say that mindfulness, healthy living, disrupting reality, the pursuit of consciousness, responsible entrepreneurship, and radical parenting matter. We now amass over 1 million downloads monthly in more than 90 countries. Our numbers keep growing because there are far more people willing to live divergently than mass media wants to acknowledge. For you, the change makers, the light bearers, the way showers, we say thank you. If you're ready to take the next step in your evolution, go now to superpowerexperts.com and take the superpower quiz. And as Neva Lee Rekla, our youngest podcaster, likes to remind us, remember, we all have superpowers and we can change the world.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Superpower Mamas. I'm speaking with Ed Squire, who is the founder and developer of Me Too, What Now, which is a nonprofit. And we are talking about healing through sexual abuse. And before we went on the break, I was talking about stories. And I just love that you have highlighted, and I'd like you to expand on that, like the power of stories. And telling our story.
Absolutely. I think it's, for me, it was the beginning of the process of recovery. It was the absolute trigger that started everything. I think in most survivors' journeys, they get to a point where they accept what they've experienced, and without any help or therapy or dealing with it, we tend to just think, okay, I'm okay now. It happened and I'm okay. And you move on with your life, and you hear these phrases like, man up is what we hear to the men all the time in this space, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and don't let your past bother you and all these kinds of things. But the reality is especially when you're a child, at certain ages of your development, like from 0 to 3 and from 3 to 5 and from 5 to 8 and in segments like that, when you experience trauma and specifically sexual abuse, it will have a physiological impact on your brain and on your developmental progress. And you may not be aware of that as you go through maybe elementary school or high school into early adulthood, and you learn to cope, but you're not aware that you're coping. You learn to become who you are, but really in a lot of people's cases, and mine was no different, I was trying to become someone that other people, what do they like? How do I behave in a way that's going to get me attention? You become performance oriented, as opposed to living out your authentic self. You're very consumed and concerned with what other people are thinking about you, and a lot of the, like I said, this all comes back from the neurological and physiological impacts on your brain that you're not aware of. And so, it wasn't until my late 40s that I realized that something wasn't right in my life, and I had never really told my story. And I had told part of my story. I was not ashamed to talk about the things that had happened. But for me, the lifestyle that I led out of that was so shameful and embarrassing that, and you know, I realize I'm responsible for the actions that I take. I can't blame them on the things that happened, even if they may be responsible for the reasons why I behave the way I do and get into the addictive behaviors or maybe self-harming ways. But at some point, you have to accept that you're the one that's in control. And if you do, then the question becomes, why am I doing this? What is wrong with me? And that's what happened to me. And that's a very common pattern, I think, that a lot of survivors go through. And that's a very difficult stage to get through, because you either decide to try to figure that out or you continue to bury it. And so what happened for me was I was bothered by it tremendously. I had a friend who I trusted and felt very safe with. And we went for coffee one day, and he was a new friend, and he also ran a nonprofit. And he just said, Ed, he said, so tell me about you. Tell me about yourself. Tell me about your life. And I thought, oh, my God, right? I don't think you want to know. But I thought, you know what? I am going to do that. And I did. And I shared, you know, a lot of, you know, I shared everything that I was embarrassed about or shameful of with somebody that I knew I could trust. And I wasn't looking for answers, and I wasn't looking for him to fix anything. And from that day forward, I began to share my story more often. And I wasn't even looking for it. It would just happen. And whether it was in whatever the environment or the situation was, the more I shared my story, the more I was able to deal with what had happened. And it caused me to think and wonder and learn and understand how to overcome the dysfunctions that were in my life that I wasn't even aware of. And so I encourage people all the time to tell your story. And that's why I like to do videos where I interview people and have them share their story. And it's a very, very much a healing process and very beneficial.
Yeah. Yeah. I watched some of those interviews, I guess you call them, but those videos. And I was very encouraged by the fact that people were able to share their story honestly, and obviously they've been through some work working through it, that they were able to share it with actually compassion and forgiveness as well.
Yes, and sharing your story on camera is not the goal either.
No, but that's how we all get to know about it. Like, we don't
yes.
have to do that.
I like to say that because I don't want people to think that I couldn't do that. You know, and that's why what happened for me was talking to one person that I trusted, and that was enough to really get the ball rolling for me and begin everything. And you know, doing what I'm doing now is not necessary for everybody, but it's something I wanted to do.
Not finding shame with it. Like, so I also am I grew up with abuse in my home, sexual abuse, my father, and what I have noticed through the years is that there's periods of time where talking about it really, really helps, writing about it, you know, but then there's times to take a break, and then, you know, it just keeps coming up now and then, you know, for me anyway.
You know, I think that happens on purpose. I really do. Anyway, as I look back on my journey, and I think I've talked to a lot of people, they agree that, you know, there's everything just seems to happen in the right time. You know, like the universe or whatever you want to call it. There's a power out there that's greater than ourselves. And when we step into that kind of living in the moment, as I was told it was called when I went to the therapy, and I had no idea what that really meant. But I really believe that things are attracted to you and come to you in the right time, as they should. And so it doesn't surprise me when you say that. And from time to time, you share your story. And it's a universal law behind that somehow. And that's how, for me, really was behind a lot of my healing, I believe.
Yeah. And you know, we're speaking to moms. And moms, you know, generally have husbands, fathers of their children, right? So one or the other partner could have experienced these kinds of things. And I know for myself as a mom, like, you know, even though I left behind that and I went through some stuff, you know, of releasing some of the pain I came through, but I actually turned to almost a perfectionist type thing, you know, as a parent, like, well, if I just do good enough, it's going to be fine. And then at certain ages that my children became, like, different times in my life, people showed up when I needed them. Like, when I hit the age of my own abuse, like, that was a trigger time for me. When my daughter hit that age, like, those are periods. But that's also time periods where people were in my life that could support me going through that. So, yeah. So these things can be hidden, as you show in your own example, for a period of time, you know, where you feel like you're successful and you're doing and you're carrying on, but then suddenly something comes up that allows you to take another little look at what has happened to you in the past.
Yes.
Yeah. It's kind of like our past is always on the heels of our future, and it's revealed as we can handle it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So because we're speaking to moms here, I am interested in what you would like to share concerning, you know, how a parent maybe who has experienced this kind of thing, or the spouse maybe has, like, what kind of encouragement or markers or points could you share with the parents that are listening?
Well, I appreciate that question, because it was a big issue in my life, because my first abuser was my step-grandfather, and he also abused my father and all of his brothers, which I think there was four, and his sister as well. And, you know, back in those days, they didn't, you know, you would never listen to this on a podcast. This conversation would never happen.
Right.
So the pattern of the day, the accepted way of dealing with it, was by not dealing with it and hiding it, and you just get over it. And, you know, as I look back on my dad's life, and he's passed away now, but it, you know, he was a wonderful man. Thank God he was, a wonderful man, and he did his best to be a great father, but he wasn't perfect. And I can, you know, looking back, I can see the dysfunctional traits that were in his life that were unhealthy, that were affecting our family. And you know, he had no way of being able to deal with it, and he took that to his grave. And it was painful to him all the way through, because he kept it inside. Mm-hmm. On my mother's side, you know, she was aware of what happened to my dad, but, you know, they did, like many people back then. They're like, okay, that happened when you were a young boy. Is this man doing this anymore? No, he's not. He's not doing it anymore. Well, that's good. And so they just assumed that he wouldn't abuse, because he hadn't, for to their knowledge, for decades. Mm-hmm. And so my mom and my dad would leave my grandfather and my grandmother to babysit my sister and I when we were like 3, 4, and 5. And it was during those times that he would, his pattern was, whenever I went to take my nap in the morning or afternoon, he would come in and he would sexually abuse me. And so nobody knew it. And I held that all my life, because when you're that young, you can't figure out what's happening. You don't even understand right from wrong. You don't understand your sexuality and what's happening with your body. Mm-hmm. And when I finally told my mom about it, I was in my early 20s. I thought that she knew. I really did. And she didn't. Mm-hmm. And we were standing there doing dishes. I'll never forget. I mean, she almost fell to her knees. She couldn't believe what I said. And, you know, like I said at the beginning of the show, I said, well, don't worry about it, Mom. I'm okay. I mean, I'm all right. I mean, but I wasn't all right. And I didn't know that. I thought I was. And so one of the things that had to happen, and this is very recent now, just within the last, you know, 5 years since I've been working through these issues, is that I had to ask my mom why that she and Dad left my sister and I to be babysat by these people when they knew he had a pedophile past. I had to ask.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have a great relationship with my mom, but it really impacted her deeply, you know, and it took her a couple of years, you know, and for us to work through it together and on her own to reconcile the fact that, you know, it wasn't her fault either. Right. I mean, she did the best she could. And so that was a critical point for her to not, you know, to stay on the side of blaming yourself. And seeing the progress I was making was very encouraging to her. Mm-hmm. I say that to be able to answer your question. One of them is this, is that a parent can never be so trusting in anyone that they leave their children with to think that this could never happen. And so I believe that it's worthwhile teaching yourself as a parent and then teaching your children. And there's many different ways you can, there's many different organizations online that can teach you this, but to teach your child things like body safety, what does that mean? When, what is an inappropriate touch? What is okay for someone to do? What is not? And what is, without using the word grooming process, because your child won't understand that, but explain what happens when these little nuances take place. And typically it's with people that we know and we trust that are in our close circle. So don't hide away from thinking that it'll never happen. And be aware and educate yourself to understand the signs that can become evident in your child's life at any age as they're growing up. Different dysfunctions, things like if they don't want to hug grandma and grandpa, if they don't want to hug auntie and uncle. I remember when I was growing up, that's what you had to do. You had to hug them, right?
Yeah.
But if they don't want to, then they don't have to. But let auntie and uncle and let grandma and grandpa know beforehand and in private, let them know we're teaching our children these things to protect themselves, protect us. And so when it comes time for hugs, if they feel awkward and don't want to, then they don't have to. I don't want them to feel pressured that it's okay, please give us a hug, and allow them to be in their own safe zone. And so these are, I'm just really scratching the surface of, workshops and some of the education I've taken, and I'm not even a parent.
Right.
But I have an extreme interest in understanding these things for my own health and welfare, but also so I can help other people like I am on your show. So yeah. Those are some of the things.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate what you're saying. My granddaughter is 2.5, but from the time she was able to make a decision as to whether to go to another relative or not, she has decided not to for the most part. And honestly, I taught not just my daughter, but especially my son-in-law, this is wonderful to honor her, and her feelings about what she wants to do, because in time, when she feels trusting, she will, or when she feels that she wants to, but she'll always know how to say no.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And allow them the safety and the freedom to be able to do that.
Exactly, because they are building their own life and that they are in our trusted care. However, they are not like our ownership, They're
there's a wonderful lady that is a part of my in my advocacy circle and a good friend. Her name is Feather Burkhauer. She's on Facebook, and she's been in this advocacy space for over 25 years, and she's fully qualified person to be able to, she teaches courses and seminars, and she's written books that teach parents these kinds of things. And the name of her organization is called Parenting Safe Children. And I love to be able to plug things like that when there's no benefit to me other than knowing that it'll help other people and educate them and help them prepare for these kinds of things. So it's Parenting Safe Children, and she has tips every day on, hey, what do you do if you have a sleepover? How do you manage that? What do you do about, like, what is body safety? How do we teach that? And yeah, she has a lot of great resources that can help parents to educate themselves.
Yeah. So, and I really appreciate you sharing this, because this is what I want the show to be able to do for the parents that are listening, is to give them resources that they can make use of while they're raising their children. In addition, I want to, something else crossed my mind. We want to set boundaries like your parents, but we also want to have compassion for the people who just didn't know how to deal with things. Education wasn't out there. And, even the parent or the person that's abusing, who knows what those people have been through in their own lives that created a situation where they are compelled to do these kinds of things. That does not mean, though, that we break down boundaries. It just we have the compassion and the ability to forgive, right? So you want to speak more on that?
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think for every survivor, that's one of the most difficult things you'll ever have to deal with. And you know, the question, do I face my abuser? Do I say something? What do I do? And the first recommendation I gave is you don't have to do anything now. Mm-hmm. You need to work through even just entertaining that thought. And but I agree with you that we need to forgive, and that's really, really hard. And you know, I have two things that happened to me. One was before my grandfather died, I literally went to his deathbed, and my sister said, "Hey, if there's anything you ever wanted to say to Grandpa before he dies, now would be the time." And I went there. And make a long story short, I told him that I remembered everything, and I told him how much it destroyed my life. And I said, "But you know, I don't believe that anybody is born wanting to do the things that they did like that." And I said, "I want you to know that I forgive you." I believe that for me, when you die, you go to heaven and you meet your maker. And I said, when you get there, I believe you're going to be exactly the way that you were born to be. And I would sure like to see you there. So think about that before you close your eyes for the first time. So that had a huge impact on my life, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then more recent than that, I was at an event locally here in Denver there where I was speaking at a community awareness event called Shift. And it was their first annual event where they come together with the local community and they invite local law enforcement and different advocacy groups. And they talk about child sex trafficking and child sex slavery.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was invited to come and speak there. And sadly, part of the shameful parts of my life that I very first talked about with my friend it involved, being in that space in a way, not child sex trafficking, but I mean, I was hiring prostitutes and spending money on prostitutes for many, many years. And, you're considered you're the guy that all these people are out to get. Mm-hmm. And they invited me to come and speak and share my story. And you can tell the way I'm sharing it with you now, it's still embarrassing. It's still shameful, but I've overcome it enough to be able to speak into that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I stood up in front of that crowd, 1,000 people, and just listened to all the previous speakers that went before me talk about how horrible people like me were. And then I went up on stage. I mean, I felt really bad.
Hard,
you know, my introduction was like, "Hey, I'm the guy you're all wanting to get. And I don't do this anymore, but I did do this, but I just want to tell you something. Here's part of my story." So I shared, you know, that my grandfather sexually abused me, my next door neighbor, and my elementary school teacher for 2 years. And he sexually abused many, many boys. And I went through a lawsuit. I took him to court and the school board. And so my life was deeply impacted and influenced by these things. And they caused me, I believe, to do the things that I did later in life, because sexual addiction was a part of my life, performance orientation and all these things, codependency. My sister didn't turn out that way, so what happened to me? So we joke about it now, but so I said to the crowd, I said, "I just want you to know that I wasn't born thinking that I would do that, and I think there needs to be an area and a space in this type of raising awareness in child sex trafficking, sex slavery, and commercial prostitution to think about the Johns as they're called." Mm-hmm. And develop a way to reach out to them as well. And I think it's from people like myself who have been through that and understand the secrecy and the habits and the addiction behind that and come out of it and then speak back into it like I do now. And that meant forgiving myself. So the whole point to answering your question is, one, I had to forgive my abusers. Whether it was in person or not, it doesn't have to be in person. And then I had to forgive myself for the things that I had done. And I don't recommend standing in front of a crowd of 1,000 people where the FBI is and explaining your story if you're like that. But the truth of the matter was, you know, I said to this audience, I said, you know, I was dressed in a very expensive suit and I looked very sharp. And I've been a corporate senior business consultant for many years. And I dressed that way on purpose. And I told them, I said, because you don't know who it is. It could be your next door neighbor. It could be your husband. I'm sorry, but you don't know. And these conversations need to take place. Yeah. And then I cried in front of everybody.
Well, that's part of your healing too. Yeah, but you actually put yourself out there to assist others with their understanding and awareness,
yes,
and hopefully some compassion to the whole situation. Like it's deeper than just someone's bad.
That's right. Whether it's you, like whether that's me, because I was definitely bad, but you know, bad was also done to me, mm-hmm. And so I've done my best to try to figure this out, so I can love myself and love others without holding that anger and malice towards another human being, mm-hmm. because I really believe that we're all born the same way, right? And then life happens.
Yeah. And so bringing this out into the open, of course, is that's when healing can take place. And
that's right.
And the more that we're able to not to demonize anything, but to really just bring it out and then work it through so that it's not perpetuated, that's the part that we're really looking for.
Yes. And every single person makes a difference. I never thought that, I thought, first of all, I would never tell somebody my real story. Mm. And then when I did, I never thought that how many people it would help. And I never in my life thought that I would ever start a nonprofit and go on YouTube and on social media and be talking like I do now. But it has enriched my life. It has made my life worth living in a sense that I wake up every day grateful for the air that I breathe, grateful for the life that I have. It's not the life I planned, but it's that's not to say my life is bad. My life is better, I believe, than it ever would have been if I hadn't turned and faced and dealt with these things. And so I just, you know, you can't figure it out on your own. I tried. And the reason why we want to figure it out on our own and get better, because we don't want to tell somebody. It's shame. Yeah. We don't want to deal with shame. And shame doesn't have to be an open public confession. Shame just has to be your ability. You need to get it out of your head and have somebody listen that is safe and compassionate. And I believe just neurologically, physiologically, things happen in your brain and fire in your neurons that begin to create healing pathways in your mind and that grows into your body and your emotions and your relationships in your life. And who wouldn't want that?
Right, right. And how many layers of healing that will transpire as you create that journey for yourself and for those who you don't even know yet.
That's right. It's an ongoing journey. And it's something to embrace. And I have talked, and I mean, there's all kinds of exciting things happening in my life outside of my nonprofit that never would have happened otherwise. And, I think too, and I've heard other people say this and psychologists, that the level of the depth of pain that you feel and the emotions that you have to face when you go through this, when you get on the other side, I believe that survivors, people that go through trauma, can have a richer and healthier and more vibrant life because they understand their emotions and their feelings on a much deeper level than most people do. Because I don't think everybody just really focuses on getting to know who they are, right? And that's why I came up with Meet You What Now. My tagline is find yourself, live yourself, give yourself, because that's the five steps to recovery professionally that I coined in my own language. And that's really what you need to do. You need to figure out who you are and then learn to live that. That was a real challenge for me because I didn't know who I was when I began to do this. I'm like, oh, who am I anyway? And then live that outwardly in your life and find out that, wow, I'm really not a bad guy. People like who I am. And I'm not trying to be something to get people to like me. And they're just liking me. And then the give yourself part, I believe that once you know who you are, you're living your authentic self, and you're forgiving yourself and others, and then I believe a natural extension of that process is your life will give out to other people in some way, whether it doesn't have to be in big ways, but you live a life that's more outwardly focused than inwardly focused, and people notice that, and people want to be around people like that.
Sure. And it really, all of this, what we're talking about here, is going from no longer being a victim or a survivor, but even going into thriving, which empowers people to see that they have choice.
I love that. I love that. And it's a word that can be overused, I think. Sometimes, like for me, it was like, thriver, whatever, you know. Right, everybody's using that. But there's a reason why they use that word, because, man, who wouldn't want to live a life that is really defined by a thriving pattern and personality, I never would have been able to say that before, and now I certainly can.
And it's a choice.
It's
always a choice. We don't always choose the experiences we go through, but we have a choice through, you know, relying on each other and growing out of it. Which leads me to something that you are now starting. We don't have any time left, but we are going to just mention it.
Sure.
You told me before that all, so let's do it.
Oh, I would love to. I'll be really brief because it's in the beginning stages. So all of this has led me to taking advantage of my superpower in ways that I never thought I could, right? Just like Superman, like, give me my cape and let me fly. Yeah. And so I'm in the process of starting a new company, and it's called Visible Kindness. And the website is visiblekindness.com, and I'm sorry, you can't go there yet. I'm just going to ask you for a password, and I'm not giving it out. But I'm pre-launching on Friday night. I'm speaking at a local open mic. Nothing. It's just a pocket of people sitting around having coffee in a coffee shop. And I thought, you know, that's the thing about kindness. I don't need a big stage. I don't need spotlights. I don't need a massive audience. I just need a human being to be kind to. Mm-hmm. And I have a very cool, an exciting, very short presentation. I'm going to be, I'll be live streaming it on Instagram and on Facebook, and recording that, because filmmaking and video is a big part of what I do. And I will use some of that footage to create an introductory video that will go on my website eventually. But I will be opening up that the website after Friday night. And it's very simple to begin with, but I've got an e-commerce shop where you can get kindness clothing, and it's stuff that I've created, and it's there's a very interesting mission behind what I'm doing. And thank you for asking and giving me the opportunity to share that. So
yeah. So by the time this show airs, he will probably already have it going.
Right. That's right. Yes. So, visiblekindness.com. I love it.
Just keep checking it out. If that's something that interests you, we would love for you to visit there, because there's just always room for more kindness in the world.
Yes.
For ourselves as well as those we know. Thank you so much, Ed, for being on the show. Really, really appreciate that we were able to have this discussion about healing through childhood sexual abuse. Really important conversation. So thank you.
Thank you for giving me the space to do that. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And thank you, my listeners. We have gone over time, so I will say only that, remember, you are more powerful than you know. So take care of your children, take care of yourself, and a big hug. Till next time.
Are you ready to discover your superpowers? Go now to superpowerexperts.com and take the superpower quiz today.